We're going to do a cross-section of material, as any of you who've been to any of the other shows we've done. For those of you who haven't, I'm going to give you a bit of shtick. It's a cross-section of the material that we've got together in the last 6.5 years. And it starts with one that goes something like this.
That is one of my favorites. I love the cross-section of material. Thank you for joining me for the Zep Fan All Things Led Zeppelin podcast. This is episode 20. Welcome to today's episode, where we have the pleasure of conversing with Mark Hayward. If that name strikes a chord, it's likely because you tuned into episode 15, where we explored Peter Whitehead's iconic Royal Albert Hall 1970 film. I highly recommend listening to that episode if you haven't caught it yet. It's a roller coaster ride through the film's journey, complete with its ups, downs, and dramatic twists before it lands in the hands of Led Zeppelin. Mark played a pivotal role in the story by selling the reels to Led Zeppelin in 1999. However, don't be fooled into thinking it was a straightforward deal. It was an uphill battle from the start, evolving into a fiery legal dispute that ultimately ended up in court. Today, Mark joins us to shed light on how he initially acquired these films, his exclusive screening experience with the band, and everything in between. So without further ado, let's welcome the now infamous Mark Hayward to the show. Mark, welcome. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. Thank you very much from here in England on a Sunday afternoon. Yes. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. It's Sunday morning for me. I'm on the West Coast in the United States.
Oh, lovely.
Before we dive into the Peter Whitehead, Royal Albert Hall films and how you acquired them, kind of explain to the listeners as far as what your background is in music, how you got involved in collectors and what you do now.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's a long, long story, but in 1975 or so, Aerosmith came round to dinner at my mum's flat in Regent's Park in London, which was organised by Gilly Prudence, who's now living in Nashville, who I saw the other day, actually. I was got very heavily into music by my mother, and with Gilly's help, went backstage for many, many gigs. And of course, 1975 was also a pivotal year for Zeppelin. I saw them at the Earls Court concert. I'm sorry to say, I hate to say this to Zepp fans, but it was boring. Poor John Bonham ended up doing like about a 40-minute drum solo on Moby Dick. And quite recently, I asked Jimmy Page and told him, I told him what I thought and said, it was a very dull concert because of that 40-minute drum solo. And he said they let him play that long drum solo on one night because his parents were in the audience. So that explained that. Otherwise, I would have enjoyed it a lot more because the rest was great. Moving swiftly ahead in... I set up a record shop. I ended up signing Charlie Watts from the Rolling Stones and took him on tour to America, actually, and Japan for 2 years. That's going to be coming up in another podcast. I signed the Cranberries up. I had to turn down an invitation from Keith Richards to go to his housewarming party in Connecticut to do that. But at least I got them. Island Records came along and caused all sorts of legal hassles. And I didn't have the money to fight it at the time. Fast forward, I then released a film of Sid Barrett of the Pink Floyd on an acid trip. And I released it as an 11-minute VHS videotape. At the time, no one had ever done anything by releasing an 11-minute silent film. And nobody thought it would sell, but it sold thousands and thousands. And that pricked the conscience of Peter Whitehead. So Peter Whitehead came to my shop and said, I'm fascinated how you were able to release an 11-minute silent video and sell tens of thousands of copies of a VHS silent film. He said, I have the following films. So I went to meet Peter. I've been very much a film fan of music because I'm a big Jimi Hendrix fan. I had run out of everything that was available on Jimi Hendrix and thought, well, let's see. He mentioned Hendrix on Top of the Pops. He made a film, Hey Joe, for Top of the Pops, which lasted just about 3 minutes. And I said, how did you make that film? And he said, well, I cut it up from lots of other film of Hendrix at the Savile. And I said, oh, that's amazing. I said, well, where is that film? And he said, it's in a tin can somewhere in his barn. So I hired out a screening place in Golden Square in Soho, and Peter and I went there and looked through these cans, and about the third can we hit, there it was. It was Hendrix at the Savile, yet again, silent film footage lasting 18 minutes, and I just hit the roof. I thought, wow. So I purchased that from Peter for a very reasonable price, I must say, but nonetheless, I purchased it, and in the end, it was auctioned off several years later at Sotheby's Auctioneers, and it made the 6 o'clock news for a record price for a film, which I won't go into, but nonetheless, it was a great bit of film. After I bought that and bought several other films, I bought the Beach Boys in London film from him, some Charlie Watts films of him in Lewis in Sussex, and then he said, I've been dealing with Led Zeppelin to try and get my Albert Hall film released and wasn't getting anywhere. Maybe you could take over and do this. And I said, well, you know, what's the situation? Then he went quiet for about several months, and a few months later he rang me and said he'd had a quadruple bypass, you know, thing of the heart sort of thing, and felt very, very weak and didn't have the energy to do anything. So he said, would I like to buy the film and then take it on? So I said, I'll do that. So I paid Peter as a buyout for that film, and he said, I'll help you in anything you need to get it released. Very, very kind man, lovely. Got on with his three daughters very well and his lovely wife at the time.
To what year did you meet Peter and then you start dealing with him with the Jimi Hendrix films and so forth? When did the relationship?
Oh, good question, actually, Mark. I think that was around 1996, I think. Okay. 1995 and 1996, something like that. As I said, he came to my shop, which was in Hanway Street. It was called Vinyl Experience and UFO. And we had Bowie come to the shop with Iman and Oasis. Many, many famous people came. It was the only shop selling pop memorabilia, from like handwritten lyrics of Jimi Hendrix through to all sorts of rare stuff. And it was the first shop in the world at the time. So, yes, he came to see me then. He handed the films over. I then thought, well, I better get to work with this. You know, I've just laid out all this money. I said to him, I'm going to go on meet Bill Kerbishley, who was in charge of Trinifold Music in Camden Town. They were based in Camden Town in London. Yeah. I didn't know who this man was. I later found out he was the brother of Alan Kerbishley, who was the manager of Charlton Football Club, which is why the Who played at Charlton Football Club in 1974 and 76.
Yeah.
And so I approached him and I said, hi, I'm Mark Hayward. I bought the Led Zeppelin films from Peter Whitehead and I'm looking to release these. I said, life's too short. Let's get these films out.
Did you think it was going to be an easy process?
No, I didn't know. I've been there before with the Cranberries and many other close run-ins, and quite fed up with the music scene, honestly, with archive type of stuff. But nonetheless, I always approach with sort of an optimistic view.
Sure.
So I said, you know, life's too short. Let's get this movie out. He said, your life's going to be too short. You're going to be 6 foot under, which is a sort of a reference of buried in a grave thing, unless you hand those films over because they're stolen. And I said, well, they're not stolen. I just bought them from Peter, and he showed me all the copyright and the paperwork, and I'm happy with it. And he said, well, you still better hand the film over. And I said, is that a threat? And he said, you better believe it. So I left. I got up and left that meeting and called my lawyer, Gentle Jays. Anthony Jays was my lawyer of that firm, and said, I think I've just had my life threatened. I'm not sure. And he said, oh, he said, what's happened? And he said, well, I've just been dealing with Bill Kerbishley. He said, oh, him, you know, he's very old school. I wouldn't worry about him. Later found out he'd done 8 years in jail for doing some GBH for the Cray twins, who are notorious set of twins in England. But it didn't bother me. I said, well, what can I do with this film? And he said, well, you need to get them to come to the table. Otherwise, that film's just going to sit there. So what I did from there, I got a phone call about 2 weeks after purchasing these films. They'd already spoken to Peter Whitehead. Peter Whitehead said, oh, I've just sold the film to Mark Haywood. And it was Channel 4. We've got 4 TV channels in England, of which that was one of them. But a lot more now, by the way. But then there was only 4. And they rang up to say, we're doing a greatest 100 tracks of all time of music. We've done a competition, and Led Zeppelin, Whole Lot of Love, is in the top 50. And we need some film. And we understand you bought the film from Peter Whitehead. So I confirmed that. And I sent the film to them to do a video of A Whole Lot of Love from that music film footage. And so they broadcast it about 2 weeks later. And then the following day after it was broadcast, I got a legal letter from Trinifold Music saying, we're suing you in the High Court for breach of copyright. So I thought, good, well, we've got them on board now. So it was a bit like catching a fish, you know?
Right.
So then lots of backwards and forwards, not really getting anywhere with my legal team. So I rang up Richard Branson's PA, who just won a legal battle with British Airways over a dirty tricks campaign to get hold of their first class passengers. And I thought, well, he did very well to win that. It was a difficult case to win. So his PA very kindly gave me a new set of lawyers, and I called up Mark Lawrenson from Harbottle and Lewis and explained the case. And he very skillfully put a sort of plan together, which basically ended up with Led Zeppelin and I going to the High Court, having offered them the film and several times and lots of backwards and forwards, and Bill Kirby sticking to his gun, saying that he's got the man who said he's filmed it, it's his film, and they've got a fax from New York to say he owns it. So, and he kept asking to see my paperwork, but I was instructed by my lawyers not to show it.
Right.
I was quite heavily, I think I was £75,000 in debt at the time to my lawyers before stepping into the High Court, and I was very nervous knowing that the High Court's going to cost around £50,000 a day in those days. Mm-hmm. So I was very nervous, but I was determined to see this case through and win it, having lost a similar sort of case with the Cranberries. Before you go to the High Court in London, you get to see the judge, and you turn up, and he kind of directs how the trial's going to go. So there's these guys with the long white wigs and the robes and things. Yeah. So I went into the High Court and no idea what to expect, except the fact that I was thinking, you know, this is going to be the start of 50 grand a day, and I'm getting nervous. And then, but the first thing the judge said, with Led Zeppelin, we're all present there. Of course, John Bonham's sister was there, but otherwise, the rest of Led Zeppelin were all there. And the first thing the judge said was, well, I've read up on this case. I have all the evidence before me. And he said, so before we start this case, I want to make sure that all Mr. Hayward's legal expenses are paid up to date. That's me. That's so good, I punched the air. I just couldn't believe it. He was asking Led Zeppelin to buy 75 grand legal costs up to that date. So I was thrilled. I was just so surprised. But, you know, elated at the same time. Yeah. So, and then he said, furthermore, I need a first charge on each one of your houses, which basically means that to pay the legal fees of each member of Led Zeppelin, the court would take a first charge of their houses, which meant that if they couldn't pay the legal fees, the court would have the right to take a charge on the house and sell their house, whether they liked it or not. Mm-hmm. So the judge meant business. He knew I was being bullied. And as I left the court at the time, Led Zeppelin came running out after me, including a lady called Suki, I think her name was, saying, you know, we're so, you know, we want to buy this film. What do you want for it? And I said, well, I'm really pissed off. Right. I've been dealing with 2 years. You've mucked me about. I've had to hire lawyers after lawyers. It's cost me a hell of a lot of money and put a lot of strain on myself and my family. So I'm not happy. And they said, well, you know, what do you want for it? And I said, well, I've seen a house I want to buy down in Sussex. And I need part of this money to make that all happen.
Yeah.
So I told them that, and they went away. And about 2 weeks later, they got in touch with my lawyer. It was Lawrence Abramson, not Mark Abramson, Lawrence Abramson. They got in touch with him and said, you know, we're happy to do a deal, but we have to make sure it's the original film. So we need to see it. And so I bought along the 12 reels of film and hired a little cinema in Dean Street, which is still there, actually, where you can show these films. And the only time they could do it was 8 o'clock in the morning. And I think it was on a Monday. I can't remember, but I remember it being the morning after the Rolling Stones had played the Brixton Academy gig. Because I went to that and Jimmy Page was out there too.
Oh.
And I said hello. And that was an invite only upstairs in the circle as Marion Faithfull. She refused to sign an autograph for me that night. She said, not tonight, darling. I've been signing books all day at HMV and I'm too tired. So, the next day at 8 a.m., I arrive at Dean Street's studios and I turn up with a guitar in the hope that they would sign it, of which my lawyer said, what did you bring that for? I said, well, I hope they sign it. He said, no, they're not going to sign it. Angry and they're pissed off that they lost this case.
Yeah.
And so I said, okay. So we sat down and we watched the 12 reels of film, and Jimmy Page was rolling about laughing at the film, which had been synced up with the music. And Robert Plant was in the lift. He looked me up and down and gave me a really distasteful look of being angry with me.
Yeah.
And John Paul Jones, who I'd had dinner with in Sussex before at a friend's house. And I think Deborah Bonham was there at the time. And their lawyer. And then there was me and my lawyer. So it was a totally bizarre situation, this tiny little room. It wasn't like a proper cinema. It was a little room, sitting there watching Led Zeppelin, watching themselves at the Albert Hall, sort of rolling about, laughing and thoroughly enjoying themselves. And then once the film had finished, I said, well, what do we do now? And then they came out afterwards and said, well, we'll be in touch. And sure enough, the next day they got in touch with Lawrence Abramson and I struck a price. We did a deal and I finally got paid and handed the film over. And able to go on and buy this gorgeous estate down in Sussex.
Nice.
Not far from Jimmy Page's house. And I kept bubbing into him after that too, funny enough. So that was the end result. And that's and went on to be one of the biggest selling DVDs of all time in the UK. So.
How does copyright work? So in this, for this instance, Led Zeppelin hired Peter Whitehead to film the band, but somehow it ends up being copyrighted or owned by Peter Whitehead. How does that work out?
I haven't seen all the correspondence, but Peter told me, Peter was a very prolific film maker at that time, but it was his company, which was, I think it was called Lorimer Films at the time, and he was putting all the money up for it. He was the guy doing all the filming. I don't know what his program was, whether he was going to license it or whatever he was going to do,
right.
But it was his company, his film. He paid for it, didn't get a penny from Led Zeppelin, and he was doing it as a historical document. He'd already filmed Pink Floyd. So we saw this as, you know, the next big thing. And he also filmed the Bath Film Festival as well.
Right, yeah.
So from what I remember, in fact, what helped all the court case for me was there was a ton of paperwork that that Peter provided when I bought this film.
That's good.
And one of those pieces of paper showed that the Led Zeppelin was saying they had a man in New York who filmed this, and they faxed to say he owned the copyright. All he did was actually hold one of the lights in the concert, and we had a checkbook stub not paid £20, right. And that stub was there, which is why the judge got so angry with the whole thing, and basically threw the thing out. It was. He paid for it, his copyright, his film. He paid for all the film itself, which wasn't cheap in those days. He paid for the lighting people, the hiring of equipment, everything. It was all done by him. Zeppelin didn't put up a penny.
Okay, so that makes sense why it ended up in his hands, then in your hands. When you first heard about, it sounds like you're a big music fan. So yeah. This is the early 90s or mid 90s. You know, there's not a lot of Led Zeppelin film out there. You meet Peter, you hear about this Royal Albert Hall. What's your initial thought on that? Was Led Zeppelin high on the radar, or was like, holy shit, this is the Holy Grail right here?
Yeah, that's exactly what you just said. I said exactly that. I found it very hard to believe that I was going to be the owner of this piece of film, and the legitimate owner and copyright owner of this incredible piece of footage. And when I was asking for the price that I asked, my lawyer said, oh, that's too much. And I said, you go and find some film of Led Zeppelin playing, you know, for over an hour long in 1970 on three different camera angles. I said, there is none.
Yeah, so, nothing existed.
A professional film of them, apart from the old TV program. So I just couldn't believe it. And as I said, I was a Hendrix fan through and through, still am.
Right.
In fact, I offered that when you said to me earlier, did I think this was going to be a smooth process? I offered the Hendrix at the Savile film to the Hendrix family, but yet again, they started mucking about and it ended up with somebody else. I think because I sold my Hendrix collection to Paul Allen at Microsoft. He bought it. And that's now sitting in the Seattle Museum, the Experience Museum. Yes, I mean, and being a big video collector from about the age of 15,
right.
I was getting tons of BBC film that they were throwing away and destroying from a man called Ken Holmes, who used to work at the BBC. And he used to record all the programs, you know, Colour Me Pop and all these rare bits of film. So I was very much in that sort of collecting sphere. So I hadn't even heard of this film until Peter told me. Oh. And so getting that piece of film and getting it from Peter, who seemed such a calm man, saying, you know, I'll back you up in court. And when it came to it, he did. I cannot sort of thank him enough, really. It was probably due a lot to his testimony, too, that helped the whole thing come to an end, you know, but also a bit of skill from Harbottle and Lewis, and initially Gentle Jays, and having the will for me to take on Led Zeppelin, which was no easy task for I was 39 years old then, so to me it was a real go-to task. I thought, well, I own it, it's my copyright, so why should I not fight this and listen to this man who kept saying that I'd stolen it? So yeah.
From my understanding, there's 12 reels total. Did it all have sound on it?
It did have sound on it, but it wasn't, you know, clear and professional. Jimmy owned the original master tapes for that. So they put that together. But I could have released that anyway. I could have released all those rock and roll tracks that they covered in and probably released that quite legitimately without any issue because, of course, the copyright in the music front was owned by many companies that bought all the rock and roll stuff. They did come with music. There was a further bit of film that was sort of uncut as such, or just like a sort of a throwaway piece that lasted about 13 minutes. And that's the one that I showed to Jimmy recently.
Okay. So let's dive into that since you just mentioned it. Right when you came on, you mentioned you ran into Jimmy. Can you talk a little bit about that? To him and what you showed him?
Yeah. Well, it was. He had hoped, forget which track, he'd hoped there'd be some keyboard on this particular piece of footage that I showed him. Forget what track that was now. I cannot remember what the track was that he was searching for. He thought it would be that track because that wasn't on the original piece of film that they bought.
Right. Well, but since I mentioned keyboards, it could have been "Since I've Been Loving You" or "Thank You," because I know both of those are not in the film.
Thank you. Yeah. I think it was "Thank You." Right. Yeah, that was the one. Thank you. And so it was that track that he was hoping that this bit of film was, but it wasn't that. It was a different camera angle again. Great camera angle, actually, totally different to the one that got released. But when I said, you know, you're looking for something, why don't you put this in with a 50-year package type thing? And he said, oh, I was asking too much for it again. And I said, okay, don't worry, you know. As I said, it's peanuts for what I was asking, but I won't go into it. Yeah. So we sat down about 2 hours in total, just going through the film with him, backwards and forwards. But he said, no, I wanted that particular track.
Right. This film you're talking about, was this just an extra reel that you found? Or just outside of Mr. Whitehead's collection?
Correct.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
Okay. And just the camera angle, I think, right? I guess there, because the film reel would be a camera angle or however it's spliced together.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. But this was unreleased. Camera angle of about 13 minutes of music, and a lot of it's homing in on Robert Plant. He had a cross around his neck, so it was homing in on that as well.
Back in the 90s, I do remember hearing rumors of this being sold. I remember people telling me $250,000 or whatever, and this is before it went on Sotheby's. At some point in the 90s, a bootleg copy obviously came out that was 42 minutes or so. Are you aware of that? I mean, was that something?
I think Bill Kerbishley told me about that. And you mentioned Sotheby's. That's very interesting. Earlier, to try and get things moving. Nothing was happening. Sorry to go back a bit.
Go ahead, yeah.
Nothing with a deal being done. So this is within the 2 years of all this legal stuff. And before the legal stuff began, I decided to put the film in Sotheby's to sell it with copyright. John Badley of Sotheby's took it in, and then I received that writ, as I told you about, after having a whole lot of love broadcast. And so then I had to remove the film from Sotheby's, and I said, it's got a legal issue, so I can't sell it through you. And then he said, we're going to have to charge you our 20% sales anyway. And I said, no, you're not, and told him where to get lost. And he now works at Bonhams and has banned me for life from buying there, which is a real trap. But anyway, that's him and I don't see eye to eye anymore. So, but that's what happened to that. I wasn't aware of a bootleg copy. I do have a U-matic master of the film itself cut together, but no, I wasn't aware of the bootleg copy, and I don't know how that could have happened or how it could have got out, but certainly didn't come from me anyway. So,
okay, you mentioned the BBC clip you sold to Channel 4. Did that also include White Summer? Because I know there was an upgraded clip that used to circulate of Whole Lot of Love in White Summer, so I didn't know if that was part of the package, or was this just Whole Lot of Love?
No, just Whole Lot of Love. It was the top 100 all-time favorite songs as voted by the English public. So, so that's what did the Whole Lot of Love only for that particular track. Peter Whitehead kept going on about White Summer, saying that was his favorite bit of the film.
Yeah.
You know, he kept saying how beautiful the guitar playing was on it. But it's not my favorite track, but obviously it's quite a rare track. So, So in the end, everything finished. I ended up with a house. They ended up with a film that sells very well. I met Jimmy probably about 15, 20 times post this particular legal court case, and became very friendly with him. Funny enough, we ended up sending our children. We attended a school together with our children. And he was living in Sussex, as was I. And we just kept meeting it several times. I gave him a Link Ray T-shirt. In fact, I wanted to sell it to him, but he just accepted it as a free gift, which is typical Jimmy.
Right, right. That Link Ray,
by the way, Link Ray movie is now will be coming out shortly. A movie on Link Ray.
James did an amazing job on Led Zeppelin News, or Led Zepp News talking about, you know, Peter Whitehead and all this stuff that came out and the ups and downs of this. And, he, you know, you being part of it as well. So makes you infamous for in the Led Zeppelin circle. So very good stuff.
I thought James did a great job, too. I mean, I was very surprised when he contacted me. And then he sent me Peter Whitehead's witness statement in court, which I hadn't read actually since then. So it was very nice to see that again. And he was very thorough. And it was just a very chance phone call. But it was funny seeing the reaction of Bill Kerbishley denying the whole thing and not knowing it ever happened. So anyway,
James has been doing an amazing job. He's coming, bringing up some really great stories. And the fact that Bath just, you know, came out last year is really exciting too, because the rumors of that's always been, it's too dark, it's not watchable, but the footage is beautiful. Obviously it's not, but not all full songs, but it's still amazing stuff and such a great document for Led Zeppelin fans. Because as you mentioned earlier, there's nothing on Led Zeppelin. They never filmed. They never did anything professionally. They never did TV. They didn't do anything. They just played. They never worried about filming concerts.
Where else are you going to get that? And you see the new generation of fans coming through expect everything to be absolutely fabulous quality and everything's superb. In our generation, growing up in the 1970s, there was some Led Zeppelin bootleg albums that had been released where they'd just been recorded on cassette tapes and they were terrible quality, some of them. Yeah. But still, as a fan, they were great to hear because you wanted to hear how they'd be playing on one particular night at a particular concert. So it was a, you know, it was quite a privilege in those days. And now, of course, everything is, you know, you can digitize everything and make it all look fabulous. And the new generation are very lucky to hear all this historic music now.
Right, exactly. Speaking of getting tapes, I think that's one of the things that kept Led Zeppelin alive in the 80s as well, the bootleg collectors. But I remember you would get a tape because in the internet, you could download anything or find any show immediately. Back then, you'd get the one show and watch it over and over again because you know, it's a brand new, something you just acquired. You're like, oh, this is amazing. I'm going to watch it. I always like to end my show with asking questions with one word answers. So let me ask you these questions and you can answer with one or two words if you'd like. Favorite Zepp LP?
Ooh, I've got to go for four.
Favorite Led Zeppelin song?
Ooh. It's one off Physical Graffiti. Probably Trampled Underfoot, which is an unusual one, but yeah.
Jimmy Page or Robert Plant fan?
Oh, 100% Jimmy Page after Robert Plant's reaction, yeah. I hear he's a very nice guy, Robert Plant, but I've yet to meet him other than in that moment, in that screening where he was not a nice guy.
Should they have continued after the O2 show?
They definitely should have gone on. I mean, that was such a huge reaction.
Yep, that's exactly it. First Led Zeppelin bootleg you listened to?
Oh, it was called Blueberry Hill.
You mentioned seeing Led Zeppelin at Earl's Court. Have you seen Led Zeppelin anywhere else other than Earl's Court? Did you go to the Nebworth shows?
I didn't actually. No, as I said, right or wrong, I was disappointed with the 1975 Led Zeppelin performance. I'm sorry, guys out there, sort of, you know, hardcore fans are saying, what? But it really, the sound was bad too. Earl's Court was not a great venue. And it's now been knocked down and they're turning into a huge, it's the largest urban development in any city in the world right now. No, I found it, as I said, it was purely that drum solo that killed it off for me. It was just went on and on, you know, in the middle of, you know, when things were really starting to ramp up and, you know, rock up and to sit through 40 minutes of that. And I'm sorry to do this to you, Keith Richards, but it's a bit like when Keith comes on to sing at a Stones gig, everyone goes to the bar.
That's the bathroom song. Yeah. It's the same. There's always one of those at a show. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again, Mark. Is there any last things you want to tell to Zepp fans or just fans or anything you need to plug, anything you want people to be aware of?
Well, that's very kind. I mean, everything's been said about them. Jimmy's written that fabulous book, which has been released for Genesis Publications. I think they were Britain's best rock band. So full stop. I think the Stones are the best rock and roll band. I think Zeppelin were the best rock band, full stop, with the most amount of riffs. And I think the Beatles were the best pop songwriting band, who became one of the hardest rock bands in the later years of their careers. So I'm just thankful that for some reason, English rock music seems to be a worldwide asset. And great that, 100%. That English sound is still very much sought after.
Well, super. Well, thanks again for your time, Mark. I appreciate you coming on. You have a great day.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And hello to everyone out in LA and anywhere else. Thank you.
Well, there you have it. Thanks, Mark Hayward, for joining me. This is episode 20. I just want to go back and kind of recap of what we just talked about. If you haven't listened to episode 15 yet, 15 is where we had an amazing podcast. We talked to James Cook. We talked to Eric Levy, who broke down the Peter Whitehead Royal Albert Hall 1970 film. So this is where this whole story kind of started from. And Mark was a key player in that article that James Cook wrote for Led Zepp News. Episode 15, I strongly recommend go listen to it. It has a lot of great detail, dives deep into Royal Albert Hall. And this is just, this interview was just kind of a conclusion of, or a more detailed look at that article and that information of the Royal Albert Hall film. So thank you, Mark Hayward, once again. Reach out to me, contact@zeppfan.com. Rock on, everyone. Good night.